All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy.
Oh, I screwed that up again. Mark's laughing there because he knows what how it's supposed to end.
I can't get
these timings to queue up, so it's all luck of the draw. There we go. Welcome to episode 518 of the Kiss FAQ podcast. I'm your host, Julian Gill. We've got Mark's Almighty Mark here already. Daniel Wheeze here already, and Ken's having some technical issues right now, so he's rebooting his house, and he should be along very shortly. So I want to thank everyone who's joining us live: Distortion Den, AB, Opal Archive, Austin Newland, Keep It Greasy, Bill Phelps. What a week it's been. We're going to be doing board topics and a bit of this and that. Yeah. I'm going to wait for Ken, hopefully, to get here in a minute to kind of get started. But, you know, Frehley's Comet vinyls coming out remastered on Friday vinyl. That's, I think, one of the announcements for new old music that's come this week. So the Frehley's Comet LP. I don't remember the colors, so hopefully someone else has been paying attention. These may be Ken's topic, so none of us will have done our homework. But Second Sighting, for what it's worth, that's coming with the remix of It's Over Now as a bonus track on that one. So that's kind of neat. At least there's one, you know, record with a bonus track. I don't have a lot of interest in Second Sighting. I like Ace's songs on that. The rest, I mean, I can take it or leave it, to be perfectly honest, but it didn't do well for me back in the day. Mark, as a vinyl collector, any interest whatsoever in Frehley's Comet or Second Sighting to you from what you have seen or just looked up?
I mean, maybe the first one. I was never really big on Second Sighting, but I am curious to see. I'm going to do a little bit more research on it because you said this is Friday Music that's doing it, right? And if Friday Music is doing
right.
Then they sometimes get people to remaster it, like Kevin Gray and these guys that are known remastering guys. So I'm going to look if it's going to be a new remaster, if it's going to be like old stuff just reissued, sort of. So it'll depend on that, I think.
Yeah, a new remaster would be cool, particularly for Frehley's Comet. I've always said that the album doesn't hold up well to me sonically. It sounds dated. Hmm. It has that very latter half of the 1980s sound to it, and I'd really like to have a remaster that gave it a bit more pop, well, in terms of sound, not in terms of style. Daniel, yeah. Frehley's Comet, any interest?
Not really. I'm really more interested in the Ace book that's coming out.
Oh.
I don't know anything about that.
You don't know anything about that? Okay. That sounds way more interesting than a re-release. So looking forward to that one. You people out there, you know that Julian is involved in another book project. You do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ace had mentioned this on the live stream that he was working on a book with Ken Sharp. And that really is all that the announcement is at this point, except it does include me as well. Yes, a book is being worked on with Ace, an official Ace Frehley book. There is no more information at this time. It'll all be made, you know, available in due course. Again, there's no pre-orders. There's no nothing. It's not at that stage. But because interviews have been being done, and I spoke to Eddie Trunk, and he, you know, it's no secret because Ace has mentioned it. But Eddie mentioned it last week as well on his show. Eddie gave a fantastic interview. Absolutely incredible in terms of the detail for that era of the band. So, yeah, it's being worked on. And as more can be publicized, more will be publicized. You know, the official title's not out there yet. There is no page count. That's it. So there's not a lot to say. There's no schedule for when it's going to be available. It's just very much in progress. Daniel, does that answer all your questions? No, I hope not.
No, really not. The other question is, what happened to War Machine, the book you were working on that was focused on the Creatures era? We need to know that as well.
I have my limits. I'm trying to finish my Aerosmith book and get volume 2 of On Tour out, and that ran into a slight delay because of talking to, not necessarily talking to people, but getting it in front of them. So that's imminent. I was hoping to have that out on the 15th for the celebration of the 50th anniversary of my favorite Aerosmith album, Get Your Wings.
Well, speaking of that, I got the 50th anniversary vinyl that they just released.
I'm not buying any of that shit. If it doesn't have new music and a soundboard.
I don't even own a copy of that on vinyl, so I needed to get a copy.
Wait, you know? I actually listen to the Quadrophonic.
Oh, yeah?
Three albums, a lot. But let's not get off too off the topic. War Machine. Yeah, I can't focus on all these different things at once, so it's on the back burner. It's like 245 pages as it sits. But again, it looks very much like Mass Hysteria in terms of style and content. Good. But I'm just not able to do that work while working on other things that eat all my life. AI. So
I know you're
that fucking AI book. Oh my god, do I have it anywhere?
Let AI finish it.
Yeah.
No.
No. That'd be wrong.
I know you're not very fond of tooting your own horn, so to speak, or talking about sales and stuff like that. But that last book you did must have done pretty good, didn't it? Sales wise? The Hysteria?
I'll never admit it.
No, it broke even. That's the only goal, and it did its print run, and it got very, very positive reviews, for which eternally grateful. That the the concept in my head, people enjoyed, and again, it couldn't have been so without the contributions of quite a lot of people who helped me with material for Mask Hysteria. So it's not about tooting my horn. Yeah, my books are not designed to compete with Kiss official product on scale, and it met my goals. It let me stretch my wings out into a color publication and start, you know, again, that fucking book was designed in Word. Just imagine if I'd been able to afford $5,000 to send all of it over to a professional designer and transform it, because the difference would be absolutely amazing. But then it enters a professional realm, and I just don't want to go there, especially now with Epic Rights, the sale of rights, and everything that's going on around Kiss World. It's better to be fanzine kind of layer level.
Blah, blah, blah. I love it anyways, the way it is.
All right. Any more questions, or can we get back to the show?
Back to the show.
This is the show.
Yeah. Well, Ken, Frehley's Comet reissues. What are your thoughts? Because then we'll get to another reissue that's coming. I've got a little ad.
I mean, it's nice to have a reissue of it. I don't know what the mastering is going to be. I mean, I think Mark said something about that earlier. But I'm going to just get the first one, the first album. I'm not going to get the second one. That one's not my favorite. So, first one, hoping that it's, possibly better sounding than the original. Probably won't be, but it's worth a shot.
I still have that anniversary edition sky blue vinyl one that came out a few years ago. I never listened
to it again. I do have that one too. I can't remember.
No, Opal Archive. No,
please. Interrogate Julian, yes.
Yeah, but Aaron Philpott, to tastefully segue into something else, has mentioned this. I'm going to see if we can play this ad. That was the reveal video that came out from Culture Lab for the new Eric Carr Record Store Day box. Now, Daniel, I get to talk about me a little bit. I provided the audio for that bonus disc. Oh, nice. So I'm really excited. I haven't heard it mastered and how it turned out. So I want that disc, that yellow disc. but I think it's the best sounding versions of that stuff available. And it does come from, you know, Eric's tapes, which I now own and did fresh transfers for.
Quarter inch? Quarter inch tapes or cassette tapes?
1/8.
Oh, okay. Cassette. Cool.
Yeah, no, there are no multi-tracks involved in that, you know, again. But, I mean, look at that product. Now you get to see it. I had no idea how cool it was going to look, but that actually looks very appealing. Daniel, thoughts? First time seeing that ad?
Yeah, that's the first time I saw that ad, and it looks incredible. I especially like the wide creature's eyes, you know, that you could turn the eyes into... whites. It looked pretty cool, and the insides looks awesome as well. So if you're a vinyl collector, you need to get this thing. I think I'm not, so I'll be buying Julian's book instead, because his latest book has been so expensive, so I have to save up some money.
Which one's expensive?
The last one was pretty expensive.
Well, in Scandinavia it was, probably
in Scandinavia at least. Yeah, not, but it was here. Well worth it. It was well worth it. It was well worth it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Ken? Mm-hmm. Eric Carr. Any interest? I mean, Eric Carr is a bit niche. A lot of collectors.
Yeah. If I, you know, it looks kind of cool. I mean, I have unfinished business, right? Already. But you have some new, like you said, new stuff there. I'd consider it. If I see it, and it's, you know, not too hefty price, I may pick it up.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I can't remember what the pricing was supposed to be for that. You know, again, record store day, that means I got to go to a record store. I got to deal with people. Mark.
Yeah.
I that's the first time I saw the ad as well. The ad is very impressive, and it kind of tickled the right buttons with me, because I like to kind of little extras with the posters and stuff like that in there. And I don't own any of his stuff. Like, I didn't get the picture disc. I didn't get the original version that came out. So this might be the version I'll probably go and grab. The only thing I was interested in is, why is there a USB port? Is that to charge the
that's to charge eyes? Eyes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I thought there was some like secret thing that you had to like get into your computer or something. Like those, you know, those days where you put the CDs into your computer and it would play some extra videos or something like that. I thought there was some kind of hidden thing on the USB port or something.
Yeah, here's a good, you know, tangent as well. I'm putting that back up. Stop taking it off. You know,
sorry.
You guys going to do any more episodes? What are your plans for that? Since you just grabbed your guitar, you brought it on yourself, Daniel.
First off, I have to thank you, Julian, for the guitar. This is, and the listeners, this guitar was paid for by the listeners, and Julian sent me the money in order to buy this one. So this is all revenue from the Kiss FAQ podcast. So that, I think that's awesome. An Ibanez for me.
Yeah, five years it took to build up that amount of revenue.
We don't have to mention that. Yeah. But we have an episode in the works, so... next weekend we're going to record, and I'm thinking we're focusing on our favorite opening riffs this time. So
yes,
we're going to hear some stuff. I've picked my five. I have no idea what Mark is going to play, but my picks are from the 90s. I have one pick from Carnival Souls, actually, and also from Killers. I have another riff that I like, and so on. Mark, I don't know about you. What kind of... Are all your riffs from Rock and Roll Over?
No.
Or Destroyer, maybe.
Surprisingly, yeah. I did play a couple Destroyer ones before with you. But I'm having a kind of a mixed bag. I'm looking at one now from Unmasked that I want to do. And so it's going to be a nice overview, because if you do the ones that you are doing, we'll have a nice selection of different songs. So
it'll be fun.
Yeah.
All right, so either of you going to purchase the Glam Light makeup kit?
Oh, in order by the way, I got that up here.
To put up your makeup in order to really get into the spirit. Though, Daniel, I guess if you're doing mostly 90s stuff, you're off the hook.
Yeah.
Glam Light, thoughts? Let's go to Ken, because he didn't get to talk about riffs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I watched the video for the the Glamite thing, Glamlight, I guess, makeup collection. Yeah, it has nothing to do with Kiss, other than it has the name of Kiss on it. It's just, it's kind of ridiculous. It's not even for Kiss makeup. You think it would be for, you know, putting Kiss makeup on or something like that. But it's not one of those type of kits. It's more, you know, you know, women's or whatever, if you're into wearing makeup and have those different kind of interesting glammy, I guess, type shades, then that's, you know, that's cool for you. But I don't think a lot of Kiss fans are going to be buying that thing.
Rock Bottom Dual Acoustics, Daniel and Mark. Yeah.
Wow, that's a good name there.
That would be fun to see. Daniel, any interest in the glam light crap?
No, not really. Sorry. But I have to say that there's always an open invitation for Ken to join with his silver tongue and sing the stuff that we play. So you know that you're always invited.
The show would be like,
yeah, that would be something. No, I'm not really into that kind of stuff. But not for me.
Mark,
no, it's a hard pass. But I mean, maybe I would get it if it was like let's say for Christmas for one of my sisters or something. If they were into or needed more makeup or something, you know. Right. But I could already see my sisters rolling their eyes with the Kiss. They're like, oh God, the Kiss thing. Here we go again. Yeah.
Yeah, no interest, but hey, you know, again, it keeps Kiss out there, keeps their name out there. It makes some collectors really happy and excited just to see something coming from, you know, from Kiss, since there's so little coming from them. So we'll take any scraps from the table that we can get at this point. So Ace, let's go back to Ace, because the Metal Voice podcast, Ace appeared on that, and apparently Ace called Steve Brown regarding the 95% comment that he had made on Three Sides of the Coin. Oh, God, Three Sides. You guys are such disruptors of the harmony again. and Steve apparently apologized to Ace. Mm-hmm. You know, I think my take on it is upselling product is, you know, part of what you do in the release cycle. And it's very easy as someone who contributed to a project to oversell your contribution or to upsell it in a way which crosses a line. So again, I don't really have any dog in that fight. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about Justin Hawkins more when it comes to Ace this week.
Because I see his podcast.
I love that
guy. He is a fucking tosser, but he is hilarious.
He's cool, man. I like Justin.
I don't know whether he's cool, but he's certainly witty. So Ken, Metal Voice, Steve Brown, 95%, or Justin Hawkins. Ace has a lot of drama going on around him. What do you think?
As always, as usual.
Yeah. Well, the Metal Voice thing interview, and that's, you know, I find it interesting that, you know, Ace actually, you know, knew about it. Well, I guess, you know, bad news does travel fast and word gets around, especially if someone says something about you and then you hear it like, oh, that's not correct. So yeah, he corrected that and, you know, I guess had to call Steve up and say, hey, what were you talking about or whatever? And supposedly, yes, Steve was kind of, like you said, Julian, overselling it, trying to, you know, push and, you know, up himself, actually, maybe give himself too much more importance. But, you know, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I don't think it's something you should say in the first place. Probably not. Mm-hmm. If you're doing that on the artist's, the main artist, you know, recordings or whatever, stuff like that.
Yeah, the talent, because the cachet of...
They're paying the bills. They're paying the bills.
Versus, you know, former Trickster guitarist or Trickster guitarist, pardon me, because they are still around. you know, again, you got to be careful of your ego. Mark is shaking his head. You look ready to pounce on this.
I have my quarter ready.
Oh.
All honestly, right, let it go.
Honestly, I think Ace Frehley's turning into a bit of a crybaby. Okay. with both situations. Number one, come on, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize how much Steve is involved with this record. All I have to do is listen back to his prior records to realize how much he did in order to make this record much more listenable and much more Ace-like than anything that he's done himself. Okay. I think that Ace is just sulking with this. You know, he didn't want the cat out of the bag that he did probably diddly squat compared to how much work Steve did to it. Okay. And he didn't like it. It ruined his ego, because all he was doing beforehand was going out there talking about, this is going to be my best album since 78. Ah. So before, you know, when you're going out there and doing all that stuff now, you know, and somebody comes out and says that, you know, well, yeah, it's a great album, but I mainly did most of the work for it. Of course, he's going to feel like an idiot because of it. And the other thing that really bothers me, too, is Ace Frehley on that cruise, why Justin Hawkins got pissed off is because he was like 40 minutes late getting on for his show. So that, and when you're in a festival situation, everything gets pushed. All the artists that are after him had to sit there and wait. And, okay, you know,
hold it right there. KK Downing went late, who was the preceding artist. And then during switchover, one of his crew broke his ankle. Ace was in a holding room, getting delayed. Now continue that comment, Mark.
Okay, so but still, nobody mentioned that, and everybody seems to mention the whole fact that Ace really was the one who held everything up. Later on, I heard that there was something to do with KK, but I don't see anything about KK floating around in the news circles about that too much. That's mainly with him. Now, the thing is, you got to understand the mentality behind this. Even if it was KK or even if it was Ace, I'm just defending Justin, because the fact is I've seen a few things like that happen before in festivals I was involved with. And even look at, there was a great story with Joe Satriani when he was playing a Monterey or that festival in Switzerland. What's that called again? Montrose. Stevie Ray Vaughan went on and overstretched his set by like an hour. And Joe Satriani goes on at 2 a.m. and he was pissed and had lots of great words to say about Steve Vai after that. So this is exactly the same shit. You don't go and do that. That is unprofessional and it's complete bullshit. And if people start talking about you on stage, suck it up, because you're the reason why they're saying that. Because if you can't be professional about it and follow your time slot, then don't go and play from festivals. It really pisses me off, that kind of stuff.
So you're completely disregarding a broken ankle in KK's set going.
I am disregarding it totally.
Still Ace's fault no matter what, right?
It's Ace's fault. They did patch it up, unfortunately, but, you know, there you go.
I don't think they patched
Forget the
it
rest
up.
Of this stuff.
I thought the personal insults were way overboard. No pun.
Well, there's a picture of those two like, all overboard. Together, thumbs up, and saying that they worked it out afterwards.
Oh, they should have. Oh, God. All right, Daniel.
What's the question?
I have no idea. Ace Frehley.
I think Ace said something that was pretty important in those interviews that he did after the album was released, and that was, I don't like being a boss. I don't like being in charge. And he's liked playing the second fiddle, even back in the day. You know, Kiss and Tell. This guy carried Ace for a while, and there's other guys that has been carrying the load in the band. You know, the second album there, I listened to that piece of crap the other week. Oh my Lord, that's not a good album, the Second Sightings. But you had Todd Howarth being the main character, and Ace willingly letting him be in charge. So I guess he continues to do this. He needs like an accomplice or a partner in crime, or, you know, a colleague that
does the
most
work?
Of the work. Yeah. Yeah, I think he needs someone who does the work.
Then?
Yeah. Yeah. Just because he tries to... exactly.
It makes him look bad.
But we all know when reading Kiss and Tell or Into the Void or all these books, it's kind of obvious, even though we don't know how much is true in these. They're pretty similar when it comes to the way they view Ace. And Ace is in need of a collaborator that can help him get the albums out and help him doing stuff. Because he knows it, we know it. he's kind of lazy and he needs someone to help him.
Kind of, yeah.
And I guess that was what happened on this album. But I think they managed to create a pretty cool Ace Frehley album. So I have, you know,
I think the album is great.
I think it was a good collaboration. But yeah. Ace, well, he can pretend he did most of the work. But I think Kiss fans, or at least diehards, know that the other guy had a lot to do with what became this album.
I don't think it's about trying to quantify who did how much work into percentages, because when Steve brings Ace an idea like Walking on the Moon, and Ace flips it around, rewrites it, moves things into the verse, into the chorus, you know, that's a collaboration, regardless of who brought in the song. But I think in the internet age, communication is all over. Everything becomes a clickbait headline very rapidly. What would it have been like in 1989 for Trouble Walking with all of those songs that Richie Scarlett brought in to those sessions? Again, you have someone bringing in a lot of material. Go to Second Sighting as well, for that matter. And the role that Todd performed on those sessions out of necessity. But they didn't have the microphone to us and the fans and the market that going on podcasts has in this day and age. So I think it's all a matter of behind the velvet curtain, you know, everything, the secret sauce, the recipe is now known or communicated. So when you suddenly have someone who's going on a show, things I think are very easily misconstrued and taken out of context, because Ace has been upfront talking about how the creative process was working. And when you listen to every single song on that album, who's the singer?
Yeah. That's good. Ace. That wasn't
you
the
know,
case
Ace,
on
Ace
Second Sighting.
Ace solos are throughout. You can tell when it's Ace, and you can certainly tell when it is not. So I think it's also unfair to try and say that, you know, someone is more important than the other person when it is a collaborative project that has Ace's name on it. Mark, I'm sure you're going to have something on that. Can I put another card in the Mark machine?
Ace,
well,
not
no, Tiger. I mean, the whole I understand that he's the central point of it. Obviously, it's his album. You know, Frehley's Comet was his band, right? So of course the focus is going to be on him. And as soon as you're a singer, then the focus is going to be on you, no matter what. You know, so. But, you know, the thing is, and people are writing here in the message board saying that, you know, Elton John needs a partner. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, that's great. But that's been from the very beginning. And he's had no problem saying that, you know, Bernie wrote the lyrics, I wrote the music, right? But, you know, I don't think it was ever that clear. Like Julian said, back in the days when there was no internet, we didn't know how much involvement these other people had until much later, right? So I just don't. My only problem with Ace is that, you know, when somebody goes on an interview and says, you know, I got involved with this and this and this and I did this and that, that he has a problem with it. Well, I mean, but that's been your whole history. You've had other people do it. Why be upset about it now? I mean, you know, that doesn't make any sense to me that he's getting upset about it now, because like Daniel said, he's had this sort of input from people and help from the very beginning of his solo career. So what's the big deal now? I mean.
But I do think the Trickster guy went a bit overboard. He should have been a bit more cautious with what he was saying.
Yeah, but don't forget, too, when you're being interviewed, too, and people start, you know, prodding
you.
Yeah,
he got carried away a little bit.
Yeah, it's like they started out, yeah, come on, Steve, you really did. You did that solo, didn't you? He's like, well, you know, they sometimes pull shit out of you, right?
Yeah, and that the same goes for these live episodes. Sometimes you say stuff that you would like to edit out later, but when it's live, you can't take it back.
Do you mean I've had to edit things that we've said before?
Some things have happened. Some
Daniel.
Things have happened. Yeah. I don't know what you're what you're talking about.
I'm getting nervous. Does that help?
I like to make Julian do some, you know, editing work. I like to make some extra work for Julian. So sometimes things go sideways.
Yeah, no, it happens to us all, Daniel. Yeah. We've all said things and, you know, we've all regretted it. All right, Ken, let's have some reasonable comments about Ace.
What's the reason?
Well, Ace.
Ace Jesus. Live on the Monsters of Rock and Ace and Steve Brown's 95%.
Did I see it? I saw a little bit of the Monster Rock thing. That was pretty good. Not bad. The Steve Brown thing, going back to that, Ace, what he needs is, it's kind of a statement of life. He needs a director, you know, like, yeah. Steve Brown's a producer, director, a director who, you know, says, okay, you need to do that. He organizes things for you, gets it all in order for you and tells you, okay, you can do this here and do this here, that sort of thing. I think, you know, Lara is the same way. You know, they go shopping. It's like, yeah, Ace wants two. Ace wants two. No, you can't have two of those. We already have two back at home. Ace, you just get one, you know, or whatever, yeah. You know. She's the kind of the life part of it, organized, keeps him organized and in his lane and directing him this and what that. And that, I think she's been great for him, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and doing elements of the online engagement, that, you know, the TikTok, the Instagram, the little short videos and all that shit. Oh, no politics, please.
I'd hate to see Ace by, you know, just by himself. I think he just needs that someone there for him to help guide him, you know.
So what you're saying is that if he didn't have her, then he'd be like basically like living in a refrigerator box and not knowing what he's doing?
That's possible. I don't know about a refrigerator box, but I just think he needs somebody.
Yeah, I totally agree. But you've been mentioning KK's band, KK's Priest, a whole lot. I don't know your thoughts on that band, but that would be a pretty cool episode for that Lukey's Rock and Roll podcast. I like some of the stuff he's been doing, and I especially like the thing. Okay, Julian doesn't agree, but we all know he has no taste. So the vocals, wow. The vocals in KK's Priest is pretty, pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Ripper Owens bringing it.
Ripper Owens is great, man.
And it's kind of similar to Judas Priest stuff. Even though the Judas Priest album went to number one over here.
He's better than Halford in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but Judas Priest went to number one in Sweden. Way better. That's pretty cool.
When I saw them on the Jugulator tour when they came out.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
I saw them on the
I saw them on the, and honestly, the audience was like this at first when they came out. Everyone's arms standing. Yeah. By song two, I had people all around me saying, this guy's fucking really good. He's better than Halford. So many
you
people
have to
are
see
saying
him live.
That. Yeah, and
Halford in his
prime. I love Halford, okay? Don't get me wrong, yeah, okay? Yeah. And I've seen him live many times, even on his solo tours, and he's good, but he can't hit the highs like Owens can. There's no way. I've seen him live, and he does it much better. Much better.
I saw them live in 2001.
Okay, that's not his fault, is it?
Yeah. I saw them in Stockholm 2001, I think, when Ripper, after the second album, I don't remember what it was called. The first one was Jugulator, and then they released Demolition,
buckets,
exactly.
Buckets of Piss.
Demolition is
but
terrible.
Live, it was awesome. And it was dreadful. A small place, only real fans, so it was pretty cool to be at that show. I got
promos for those, and they went down the garbage chute pretty sharpish.
Yeah.
They were dreadful.
Go listen to some old Aerosmith.
I've listened to KK's Priest, and in terms of the music, you know, I have the same. And let's go into this first topic, because, you know, we're talking about Judas Priest, and... Mm-hmm. You know, someone's raised the point. Ken, was this you? Because Ken's on the show today, guys. You know, the new Judas Priest song, Fight for Your Life, sounds like God of Thunder. It plays off that riff phrasing that God of Thunder has, which also is present in Mr. That. Blackwell. My immediate response to that is no. It sounds more like something off Killing Machine to me. It's totally way more connected to Killing Machine in terms of its sonics, played by two guitarists that don't have any identity of their own, than it does Kiss. Mark.
What a guy.
No,
Richie
Faulkner. Mark, you can wait, because let's go to Ken.
Okay, I'll shut up.
Okay. Well, me too. I mean, someone had brought it up on the board about it, and So I did go out and listen to it, and it's, I guess, the fight of your life, I think, is the song. And the, I mean, you first started, it's like, oh, right away, you can hear that similarity of that opening, God of Thunder,
I'm listening to it now.
Riff. And but it's kind of like twisted a little bit differently, but you still hear it. It's like, oh yeah, let's use this and twist it and then do something else with it, which people do that, you know, artists, you know, free to steal, or what do you want to call, steal it or manipulate other artists or songs, you know, material from before them, but it still has that little bit of that sound. But yeah, it does. But that's it. I mean, that's really the whole thing. Once it gets past that and gets into the, you know, the verses and the chorus, it's really there's no similarity from that point to God of Thunder at all.
Riff is similar, yeah.
But that opening riff is definitely, it's like, oh, I can hear it right away.
Me too.
So, I mean, I can play it here. I got a little bit of it here.
I've heard it. I don't know if it'll every play, day.
But, you know, I could do it. But anyway, you just got to take my word for it.
Yeah. I think it's the opening riff is obviously similar to God of Thunder and the same tempo and everything. But I just think it's so cool that Judas Priest in 2024 can hit the number one spot on the album charts in Sweden.
Yes.
That's so cool.
Amen.
We're so cool over here.
You are.
I mean, what's number one over there? Some fucking hip-hopper.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Our charts.
I think it's so cool that people still buy this stuff and understand that this is what's good. Judas Priest, I listened through the album. It's a pretty good album. Lot of cool songs. Yeah, I was. But I think they've been releasing good albums ever since Halford came back. I have to agree with Julian that Jugulator and the other one there, Demolition, or whatever it was called, pretty weak albums. But after that, they've released a few that has been pretty, pretty good. Pretty good.
Well, yep. We'll forget about Nostradamus there.
I love that album.
That album is shit.
It could have.
The only one I didn't like was the Nostradamus thing.
They should have turned it at the end and said, "Let's just make a single." They should have Elderfied it and said, "Let's just make a single disc, not say anything about a concept, and give it a proper album title and cover." And then you take 10 songs off Nostradamus
that would have helped.
With no context. Yeah. It would have helped, but instead it was stretched out to 2 CDs with all the interconnected.
On the shade. Yeah.
So there was filler. Okay, Mark, you disagree with my opinion on Judas Priest.
Well, I think the album is fantastic. The whole thing with the riff is like, come on. I could probably show you 7 other bands or 8 other bands that have the same sort of riff there. I mean, you know, you only have 8 notes in a scale, right? So what are you going to do, right? After a while, things are going to start sounding similar, okay? And on the album, what I've really like, though, is that there's a lot of similarities with their own catalog, though. Like, you listen to Panic Attack, that sounds like it could have been on Painkiller, you know, then there's other songs that sound like it could be from Ram It Down. There's some other stuff on there that sounds like it could be, you know, back in earlier days, like Stained Class and stuff like that. There's definitely tipping of the hat to their back catalog, and it sounds really good. The production of it is fantastic. This is one of the rare albums that I listen to in my car every single day. I listen to this album. I love it. I'm not getting sick of it at all. I think Halford does a great job. Yeah, is there some help technically with him? Yeah, of course there is. Because, I mean, if you watch him live now in the live tour, you know, he has a little trouble here and there. But that doesn't matter. In the studio, you know, the main thing is the songwriting, the construction of it, and how the final product of it is. And it sounds fantastic. They wrote great songs. I love it. I think Richie Faulkner doesn't get enough credit. Yeah. He does some great guitar playing. His riffs and his sound of his guitar is great. You know, they don't need KK. Fuck KK. Leave Richie Faulkner in there.
Boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Forget him.
Richie Faulkner alone.
Richie Faulkner is good. He fits in perfectly with
John KK.
And Andy Sneap are cookie cutter guitarists out of the modern mold. Whereas Glenn and KK started together in 74 when Glenn joins the band and developed their skills side by side symbiotically as a dual guitar
okay, great. Within that band. But they, now what are they going to do now?
You guys. Interchangeable parts off the shelf at AC Delta and stick them in the engine.
Julian,
and then you get them doing their little shit.
Julian, listen. let me stop you right there.
AC Delta, that's
a
good
I think most Priest fans will say this to you. Do we want to have Priest continue? Yes. Do we want to have hear new music from Priest? Yes.
Yes.
Can they do it with KK and Glenn? No, they can't.
No.
Okay.
Correct.
So I agree. So the thing is
Tom Eric's thing I all think over that, again.
I think getting him involved in it worked out great. Look, they still bring in Glenn as much as they can on the shows in England.
I think he maps out a lot of guitar work, and then other guys execute it. And I don't have a problem with that. And I don't have a problem with Andy Sneap. And I don't have a problem with Richie Faulkner. They're great guitarists. But I'm just saying that the dynamic interplay of the two guitar attack is completely different now than what it was when you had two guys had come along and developed double picking, a lot of those
that's
techniques.
Great.
Now all of that stuff, it's bottled. It's,
Ken, we're hitting the same
Julian. Yeah.
And you have Scott Travis's double bass drum. It's all the fucking same. Every single song except the ballad sounds like it could be on Painkiller.
What's wrong with that? Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Even though it has inspiration from earlier elements. So
okay.
I love the album.
So for me, that doesn't matter because, first of all, I love Scott Travis. Number two, Painkiller is the best Priest album that they ever made. So if it's like that, who cares? And I honestly think that because Glenn's involvement in there still, it's still going to be Judas Priest in the end. You know, look, they brought him out to play the encore, and the poor guy can hardly play a solo anymore, and they're still bringing him up. I mean, but hats off to the guy. He's up there. The fans love him, you know, and he does a good enough job to play some of the encore stuff.
It's
you know?
In the title.
Whose idea was it to do this topic?
It's great. I'll just end it on this. A lot of people like this record. I think that they played all the right kind of stuff in there, and I think that if we're going to get one more Priest album, that's my prediction. One more, and that's going to be it.
Mm-hmm. But how did this album chart in North America, Canada, and USA?
Probably shit.
Yeah, probably.
Because no one's chanting USA, USA now when we talk about
it probably hit top 100. It probably went in the top 100.
Top 100. Oh, that's awful.
Wow.
Should be number one, as it's over here in Scandinavia. Right. You mother truckers don't have a clue.
Because I've done a ton of Priest podcasts, and
you have
on all day. No, I love Judas Priest.
Yeah,
I think we all do.
Still online, but we did one on Sad Wings of Destiny, where I pontificated that album is actually a concept album that was mispressed, and side B is actually side A and vice versa. So flip your track order
like the
around.
Elder.
I'll check that out.
Ken's Dynasty experience. So this is a Kiss podcast, so let's get back to some of these topics from the board.
Yeah.
Ken, you want to pick one of those topics to go next since you're just not getting to talk because I need to shut up.
No, it's okay. Excuse me.
I have to go and pick one.
Daniel, you pick one.
No, I'm just entering the Kiss FAQ if you go.
Oh, okay. I'll pick this one real quick. All right, because I'm going to do this in honor of Lonnie, but he's not here. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it. Your favorite three tracks from Revenge. Let's pick three songs from Revenge.
Unholy Ghost for everyone, I think.
No.
If I start. Once again, Julian.
Go ahead, start. Julian's going to be different than everyone else.
Okay, but Unholy is of course,
perfect
opener of an album. I would pick Unholy.
Okay.
I would also pick Take It Off, because I think that's a perfect... Yeah, I think that's a cool-sounding riff, Led Zeppelin sounding kind of.
Okay.
Did great live. And the third one, there's a lot of good stuff on that album, but I think I'll have to go with Thou Shalt Not, because of the powerful lyrics and the delivery from Gene. It's a good song that, unfortunately, I'm hoping he's playing that one live when it comes to Sweden this summer.
That'd be
we'll
great.
See.
Okay. How about Mark then?
Well, for sure, for me, it's going to be Unholy, probably the best song on there. I always loved it ever since the first time I heard it. God Gave Rock and Roll to You Too, I always thought it was a really strong song for them. And the one song that I really like, that and I have to thank Chris Jericho for this, because his whole thing with that band that he has, that side band. Yeah, Quarantine. When they did their version of Heart of Chrome, that reignited my liking of that song again. So Heart of Chrome, for sure, is a great song.
Heart of Chrome. Okay. All right.
Come on, Julian, what's your pick?
I'll go next. No, let's wait for Julian. I'll go next because I want to hear Julian's last. Mine's probably going to be pretty obvious to you guys.
Gene songs?
First.
Three Gene songs?
Well, you might be on the right track there. Unholy is one of them. And then I'm going to put Domino in there. I really love Domino. I think it's a really cool song.
Yeah, so pretty cool.
I really enjoyed that one. And then Thou Shalt Not, which seems to be like everyone usually likes that one. You know, picks that
good
one.
Song.
So those are the three that I pick from Revenge. I think Lonnie would probably pick one Gene and two Pauls, probably. Julian, choose your non-unholy list.
Yeah, not unholy.
Okay.
Has never made it for me.
Okay.
Tough Love.
Really?
Monstrous guitar riff.
I love that chorus.
The riff is really cool.
The chorus have a great riff. Is a bit lacking, but you have a great riff that really makes it less important to me. Okay. So I love Tough Love. And when Bruce used to do that at clinics and you could hear the instrumental track, oh, fantastic. Number one, this is my favorite song on Revenge, hands down, Heart of Chrome. From the moment I heard that song, I fell in that. That makes the album for me absolutely outstanding. And my final one, Paralyzed,
because
it's got some shuffle to it. It's just got a completely different vibe. It's a mood changer. Mm-hmm. And
that's
a
different vibe.
Yeah, that's true. So those are my three picks. So sue me.
Okay. I will sue you. Okay. Well, good. All right. Well, Daniel, did you
want to? And thanks, Mike, for the topic.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Next topic.
Okay. Next topic is rank the Ace solo releases. You know, we have a lot of. I think we'll leave the Ace Frehley solo album from 78 out of this, because that's the number one album. But Frehley's Comet, Second Sighting, Trouble Walking, Anomaly.
Well, we did this on the...
We did it a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't on that episode, I think, so... Okay. But yeah, we don't have to make it that long, but what's your... three favorite albums. For me, it's Frehley's Comet in third place, the debut, maybe 10,000 Volts in the second place, and way far ahead of the other albums, Trouble Walking. That's my favorite. What about you, Julian?
Three.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Trouble Walking. Number one
in third place. Perfect.
Number one, Trouble Walking. Number two. Wait, are we including the 78 or not?
No, 78.
Number two. I'm gonna have to go with Anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
A return to form that was really strong. And I was trying to look up what I said last time to see if I could be consistent.
I think you said that. I think you did say that.
But it doesn't really matter. And then number three, I think it was lower down on my list, but because I've listened to it a fair amount in the last week, the original Frehley's Comet. just because it was a return. I remember being all excited as a newly minted Kiss fan, seeing the videos for Into the Night and then Rock Soldiers, and you know, seeing Ace unmasked. I hadn't seen those Kerrang magazines at that point, so that it was very little visual stuff for Ace unmasked. You know, so again, if I look back at my original ranking from that episode, that album's usually a bit further down because of the Sonics. Yeah. But in terms of the emotions and all the other tangential stuff, third place.
Good picks. Ken?
Yeah, my number one is Fraley's Comet.
Mm-hmm.
And then followed by, I think, what did I have next? Trouble Walking, and then 10,000 Volts as number three.
Mm. Yeah. Mark?
My number three is always one that seems controversial, but I do love this record. I think it's the first time that Ace finally went back to a, you know, nice 40-minute length of an album. That's Spaceman. I like Spaceman for some reason. I think it's a good album. I like the songs he did with Gene, too, on that. So that's my number three.
Oh, yeah, Spaceman. Holy shit.
Yeah. Wow. And number two for me is going to be 10,000 Volts. I really think that that album's really surprised me and impressed me quite a lot. And my number one is the same as you guys, Trouble Walking. I've always thought that that's his gem. I think it's the one that best represents the vibe and attitude and spirit of it. And, you know, just like Julian said, though, a lot of that is probably has to do with his other guitar player there. I keep forgetting his name.
Richie Scarlett.
Scarlett, that's it.
Not forgetting him. He was a great member of that band.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's Keith Richards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, he had that danger about him. I was always a Bleep Richie Scarlett fanboy.
Great vocals as well.
Yeah. And just how he moved around stage and entertained and
showman.
He was always on, always turned up to 11.
Hell yeah.
All right. Mark, do you have a topic?
The topic that I saw that I really enjoyed was the best opening act for Kiss. So I remember thinking back to when I saw Kiss before, and they were never good bands when I saw them. I mean, I thought Degeneration opened one time for Kiss, and you know, but when they did the co-headline tour with Crew, that was pretty good, and they had a couple of good openers there. But I wish I could have gone back to those days when they had those really great bands that they brought out, like when they toured with like Queensryche, or when they opened with AC/DC or something. You know, that's the kind of bands I would have loved to have seen. So I think, you know, having to see Queensryche with them back in the day would have been something that I would have loved to have seen.
I think this Surfer fan says Richie Scarlett stood by Ace. He's a great performer. But the way he was left out of the band was really terrible. You know, he had just lost his wife, and then Ace. Actually, Gene had an idea how Ace could save money, it seemed like. And that was by firing his band and using Gene's band, and then Richie was without a gig. I think that was an awful way to end the collaboration between Richie and Ace, and it's all on Ace.
There's no good way to do business when there's business involved. That's the sad thing. It's what it is. All right, Mark, you had a topic, I think. Or was that your topic?
Oh, yeah, I said it. The best opening act for Kiss.
Oh shit! Yeah, sorry, Daniel went off on a tangent there. Sorry.
Yeah. I've also picked up a topic. Do you want another one?
Best opening act for Kiss.
Best opening act. Okay, we're still on that one. Yeah. For me, I have to go with the ones I've seen. There has been some pretty good opening acts at the concerts I've seen, but there's one that takes the cake that made all of Stockholm Stadium jump up and down, especially for the final number, and that was Europe. You know, Europe opening for Kiss, and I think it was... was it 2010, I think? You had the whole stadium, 35,000 people jumping up and down singing, of course, the final countdown. You guys all know that song. But they have a lot of good songs. And actually, talking about Europe. In 2 weeks, I'm going to see Key Marcello performing Europe's classic tunes just not too far from where I live. So I'm looking forward to that. And you guys all there, if there's someone living in the north of Sweden, I'll see you at the concert.
It was fun. He was an important part of Europe for those the better albums.
Yeah. A few good albums.
I've got every Europe album, by the way. Even the modern ones. So, all right, Ken, best opening act?
Yeah, I mean, I could say best opening act overall or one I've seen, but I
you've seen a lot of shows, so.
There's a lot of different, I mean, acts I've seen. I know I enjoyed when Wasp opened, you know, that was a cool deal.
Who did you get for Creatures?
I'm going to go, yeah, I think I will go for Motley Crue. The early young Motley Crue on that Creatures tour was so, they were so, you know, that was the best Motley Crue version right there at the very beginning over any version later that came later. That was the hungry, you know, dangerous Motley Crue back then. And that was a great opening act for Kiss during that period. So I got to go with Motley Crue on that one. I saw it, so I enjoyed that one.
Terrible opening act for Kiss because it was such a fucking contrast of old versus new. So,
well, it wasn't. It worked for me. I mean, it was fine.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get to see it, so I'm also going to pick someone who I saw. Who was I going to pick? Oh, yeah, Ted Nugent. Farewell tour.
Nice. Ted.
That's Farewell tour.
Yeah,
2004, right? Rock the Nation.
2001, wasn't it?
I don't remember. It was on one of the tours. It was 2000 because it was because I was backstage. I was holding court.
I remember.
Again, love him or hate him, Ted has a great, you know, catalog of great songs that are just really fun rock and roll. I mean,
what's your favorite song from Ted Nugent?
Free for All.
Free for All.
Yeah, that's the classic.
Wango to Tango.
Yeah, that's when I start checking out. But you know,
oh god,
yeah.
Stranglehold is such a classic. Stranglehold is my.
And again, I like Little Miss Danger as well.
So. Stranglehold, one of the best. Stranglehold, the best riff of all time. I think that's my favorite riff.
Come on, Daniel, you must love Sweet Poon Tang. You love that, don't you?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah, of course. But nowhere
near Stranglehold.
Kind of like fits like a glove, right?
But the problem with Ted Nugent, you just want to edit out the solos. You know, Stranglehold is such a cool song, but you want to edit out like 2 minutes of his soloing.
Mm. Yeah. Well, goes with a lot of artists. No one's perfect. All right, let's finish up with, we'll combine two topics because neither of them should be argument starting. Notable Kiss shows you wish you had attended, and one notable Kiss show that you did attend. So let's start with wishes and then reality. Mark?
That's easy. And I think I told this once a story a long time back. I had tickets to go see, well, actually, a friend of mine had tickets to go see Kiss on the Asylum tour here in Toronto. And I was unable to go to it because I think something happened. I think I had to go to some family thing. Something that was very upsetting, that reason why I couldn't go. But I really wanted to go. As you know, Asylum is one of my favorite Kiss albums of all time. And even back then, I was so into that album. And I wanted to go so badly to see that. And I just wasn't able to go. I think there was some family function that was going on, and I was unable at that time to get out of it. But the one show that I was very glad that I did get to see, because I thought that it was probably one of the last times that I saw this other band that was with Kiss that made this concert so good. I love the dual headlining tour that they did with Motley Crue. I thought that show with Crue and them was a really great show. I mean, I rarely do I go to a concert where I kind of sit down through the whole thing, because, you know, opener, sometimes I get up and walk around and so I'm not interested or whatever. But I was in my seat for like 90% of that show, because I mean, the whole Motley Crue thing was cool, how they walked in from the back of the audience in with that whole sort of, you know, church procession coming in and everything. I thought it was a really interesting way to start a show. And I thought they were really good. The sound was so loud. I mean, it was all Mick Mars and Tommy Lee. Like, you could just hear enough of Vince Neil, and you could never hear Nikki Sixx anyways. But what was really good, though, was that it was Vince Neil's best vocal performance I'd heard. Why? Because he had broken his foot a few days before that, and he was out on stage with a cast, so he couldn't run around and do anything, so he had to kind of sit there. And so because he didn't run around, he actually sang a hell of a lot better on stage. Mm. So it made for a much better show. And, you know, plus you had Nikki Sixx running around, he had fireworks and all kinds of shit, so he didn't need Vince to do that. I wish he would do that more often, where he would actually focus more on his singing, because that show was really good. So I'm very happy I saw that one.
Okay. And you did the Wish?
Yeah, Asylum.
Oh, sorry. Shit. I was reading my phone. I'm sorry. Daniel, Wish and Reality.
He's blocking me out.
Well, you're really devoted to the episode. Okay. Let's see. Let's see now. Yeah, what I would wish to have seen, of course, Rio 1983. The crowd was so loco, crazy. I would have liked to have been a part of that audience watching Kiss with Vinny and Eric, because it was such a brief period of time they were in the band. But I do like the later shows that band did together. We all know that Vinny had some troubles with the solos in the beginning of the tour, but it started to come around, and I really love some of the solos he did, like on Calling Dr. Love, I think was an awesome solo, and just being a part of that that huge big crowd jumping around there would have been awesome. So I would have liked to be, of course I would have been just a little kid, but I would have liked to have been there. One that I went to that was pretty awesome, probably have to go with my first Kiss concert in Stockholm Stadium, the reunion era. Mm. Just entering the city, you know. We went there, and we the first night we didn't have tickets, so we went outside and we managed to grab a hold of some tickets real cheap. And just by chance, we tried to get some tickets out, and we got them, and we went in, and it was pandemonium, you know. The crowd, I've never been in a Kiss crowd like that. You know, you could stand in one position, and then 10 seconds later, you were like 20 meters to the side. I don't know what that is in feet, you guys, but 20 meters to the next, and then you moved around. So it was like kind of similar to the way the Rio concert was, a real wild audience. Mm-hmm. And I liked that back in the day. Now I'm a bit more tired. But back then it was real cool, and I think that was an awesome concert. So that's one of my favorite memories, being a part of that.
All right, Ken, Wish or Reality? And Reality.
Wish and Reality. So Wish, yeah, I wish I was at the Hotel Diplomat. But come on.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I'm going to say really, in Reality, I probably would have liked to have seen them in 1977 at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. I was in the area, but I was just starting my Kiss fandom at the time. I think it's funny, the day that they played was Elvis's Elvis died that day.
Yeah.
And I remember breaking my wrist that the same day too.
Oh no.
Skateboarding. Uh-oh. I went down this big hill.
I never thought you were a skater, Ken.
Oh yeah, I skateboarded back then.
Yeah.
And I built my own skateboard.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's wood one cool.
With a flip tail. That's news.
I thought you might have broken it doing something.
I built a skateboard in wood shop, and I made the kick tail and all that kind of stuff. But anyway,
Ken, the skateboarding voice of reason.
Yes, I was sure. Nice. Yeah, not that day, because I got cut off and I went flying in about 20 feet and landed on my wrist. But it was not a bad break. But anyway, it happened. So that's the 77 would have been great. That would have been a great, I would have loved to have seen them. But yeah. I was just, unfortunately, I was just starting to get into them. As for notable, let's see. I could say creatures, but no, I won't say that. I'm not gonna
say
I'm going to say the club tour for Revenge.
San Francisco.
The very first day of the club tour was at the Stone in San Francisco. Mm. The first show with Eric Singer live, Kiss playing live. And that was great in that little club. You know, we were packed like sardines and all, you know, sweating and whatever, but because of the heat. But it was just so, it was so great. And that set list was just awesome from beginning to end. Yeah. No fireworks or anything, just full board, hard, heavy rock. And it was really good.
All right. For me, Wish. You know what? And it remains my wish and my biggest kind of sadness. I never got to see Kiss in my own country. So I'm going to put that wish, and I'm facilitating between Monsters of Rock because of Eric Carr, 88. I was in the country on my way to Singapore, and I could have, should have, would have, didn't.
Should have.
But the show that I did have tickets for was, of course, Finsbury Park, 97, and you might as well throw in the string of other reunion shows. But for Finsbury Park, to get in your car and start down the driveway, final show of the reunion tour, festival, London, some other good acts at the time, and to break down and not make it, I wish I hadn't missed that, but I did, and that's reality. So the notable show that I did attend, I mean, I was thinking, you know, do I do Chumash? Do I do, you know, this or that? I think it's got to be Dodger Stadium.
And, 98.
98. Number one, to see Kiss on the first show of a tour in a stadium when we didn't know that the hype wasn't going to really survive, that it was over to a certain extent. And they did have the circus and they did have Smashing Pumpkins for what it's worth, dressed up as Beatles 64 opening. And you did hear the songs live for the first time, within Into the Void, Psycho Circus, and you had Nothing to Lose and you had She, which weren't then done. Opening night of a tour, there was still hope. There was still promise. There was still a lot of hype and drama, Mad TV, all the elements that went around with promoting the band at that time. And I only picked ones from when I was a fan. I didn't go to 74. I wasn't a fan. So I didn't pick my wish from that era. It had to be something that I could have, should have, would have, didn't.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, again, there's a lot of shows just because of where I've lived and circumstances. I haven't seen as many shows as I could have, as I should have. Yeah. I made up for it in the last 25 years, but, you know, I'm never be one of those people like some of the New York crew who got to see the band 400 times. I made the most. Saw them in a stadium, saw them in a club, saw them on a boat, saw them in an arena, saw them in a shed, and saw them again with some very good friends and had some meaningful experiences at those shows, right, Ken?
Yeah.
We had a good time in 2019. Was it 2020?
Absolutely. Those were great shows.
Right before the world blew up. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So there we are. There's some topics from the board, this week. Any final thoughts from anyone before we wrap?
Mm-hmm.
No final thoughts.
I guess not.
You lot just shut up now. All right. I want to take the opportunity to thank everyone who's joined us and chime in with your comments during the episode. It really is fun. We enjoy it. We'd love to know what you think. We'd love to know how you think we're idiots, which are live and in Technicolor, and how Ken is right, how Mark is right, how Julian is wrong, and how Daniel is right. You know, and give it 5 minutes and flip those around. Julian's awesome. Mark is wrong. Ken is wrong. Actually, no one ever says Ken is wrong. There we go. So thank you again for joining us on a Saturday morning. Get back to your March Madness or whatever you're doing. There's a lot of football internationals. And since my camera's going out of focus, that's it for now. So from Daniel, Ken, Mark, and myself, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for spending time listening to the KISS FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the KISS FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.